ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Brought to you by Zada Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
The Killer Bee!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's Joe George, assistant to the regional manager behind the glass, and it is a Thursday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Blankers, we got to give a round of applause to our Twitchers. Mm-hmm. Our Twitchers created dominant Christian Javier again. Christian Javier's been good this year. He hasn't been great this year, but the Twitchers fixed him. They gave him a new song. He was dominant yesterday against the Angels, and the Astros win a series for the first time in a little while.
You guys pushing back on the whole quality start, but two runs or less and more strikeouts than seven.
Yeah, boy, he
just
that.
Dusted all of that. I mean, dude was dealing. I mean, the first inning has an indication to just go 1-2-3, strikeout, including Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. It was pretty impressive.
It was really good. I'm disappointed that we're not hearing a little Suavemente right now from Joe George.
Joe's forte.
He wears mini hats. He's not wearing Play the Christian Javier music hat right now. He needs to put that one on because the Twitchers fixed Christian Javier. Here's like a serious thought about this for a second. The last 2 days proved that the Houston Astros still have one of the best 1-2 combinations in all of baseball. There we go. There's Christian Javier.
Joe, solid as a loose poop. You were right on time.
What was Javier's? What we said? Quality start, strikeout six.
Six or seven. Yeah, we were flirting with six because I wanted to go seven, and I got massive pushback from Joe George.
This is officially Christian Javier's song before he pitches in games. Because not only did he strike out more than six, he struck out 11, gave up 2 runs on 3 hits, quality start over 6 innings, earned his 3rd victory of the year. I'm happy that we have set a song for Christian Javier.
I think more importantly, though, it's the big picture of we get these guys on the right track. More times than not, from Odorizzi and Fromber. And yet another time that we go with the song and they go off and do their job, and it's just the power of the bees.
I'm thanking Twitch right now, because right now they're saying the textures are worthless. They're saying, about time we got some respect. Todd's saying, you're welcome. Dre's trying to say that I told you guys to do this last week. Dre, take a compliment.
Dre takes all compliments given by Dre. No compliment that Dre gets is bigger than the ones he gives himself. He can't wait. He has so many bruises from patting himself on the back. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, the Twitchers willed Christian Javier's dominant performance into existence. Thank you, Twitchers. We owe you one. And Christian Javier owes you one, too. But the Astros these last 2 days, look, I understand that it hasn't been all great for the Houston Astros. Anytime that they get like a win, it seems like there's an injury following it. Mauricio Dubon, Michael Brantley's coming back to Houston somewhere. Chaz McCormick's back is getting stiff again. They're 1 game above .500. They're in 3rd place in the American League West. Abreu stinks. Montero stinks. There's been a lot of negative when it comes to the Houston Astros this year. But the last 2 days have showed you they still have one of the very best 1-2 punches at the top of a rotation of anybody else in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, we talked about it the other day. I mean, as much as they've gone through their struggles, but when they need to get right, they got guys to do it. You don't have a Justin Verlander, but you got two guys that are very capable of carrying the torch. And you've seen the fact that as much as you know the back end of the rotation is in flux right now, that you have opportunities to capitalize on the front part of that rotation, and you can always find whether McCullers or Hunter Brown or other combinations. As you pointed out, we only need 4 starters for the playoffs. 2 of them are set in stone, and they look like they have not missed a beat, and that's fantastic.
Yeah, when you start thinking about this team being a playoff team, which everybody still thinks they're going to be a playoff.
Uh-oh!
Breaking
news? Ladies and gentlemen, I've just been handed an urgent news story. Stop what you're doing and listen.
Well, we got Joe George.
We've got major breaking news here for your Houston Texans.
Oh,
they made a trade.
Rookie numbers. Rookie numbers.
The lead story of the wheelhouse today. I'm calling my shot now.
CJ Stroud, number 7.
Whoa.
Well, that means Kyahmy Fairbairn can be bought?
Yeah,
or he can be generous.
What did Kyahmy Fairbairn get for the number 7 jersey?
He got to keep his job.
No, he's one of the highest paid kickers in all
of
the NFL.
He's one of the top six kickers in all of football.
And his special teams coach loves Kyahmie Fairbairn. So like his job wasn't at risk here. What did C.J. Stroud have to give Kyahmie Fairbairn for the number seven?
Oh, boy.
I mean, it's going to come out.
A half a mil?
For number seven?
A quarter?
I bet you he...
10 grand to 25 grand.
I was going to say 25K and a nice watch.
Okay.
25K and a nice watch is my guess. What did C.J. Stroud give to Kyahmie Fairbairn to wear the number seven? 713-780-3776.
Do you want more numbers?
This is huge. So C.J. Stroud's number seven. That's great. C.J. Stroud's going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL because that's a great number.
I mean, he idolized Michael Vick, so here we go. Strong start.
Can Will have 31?
Nope, 51.
51.
Will Anderson 50? I don't know if I like that number about Will Anderson. I don't know if 51 translates into double digit sacks, Joe George. Like 51 seems slow. It seems sluggish. I'm not sure Will Anderson's going to have an outstanding career because he chose a poor number.
Does anyone else on the Texans matter besides Tank Dell?
Tank Dell matters a lot.
Do you want Tank Dell?
Yeah.
Number 13.
Wasn't that Brandon Cooks's number?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I want all that on me my first year in the league.
I don't know if I like 13 for Tank Dell.
I don't know if I like that period because it was Brandon Cook.
I do like a number not being like normal receiver number that isn't an 8, right? Because like you wear a number 8, it's like big old school receiver.
I mean, he could have gone 0.
I wanted him to be 1. He wore 1 this past year when he was the best receiver in all of college football. I wanted Tank Dell to be number 1. So I'm disappointed by the 13.
Last time we had, what was it, Lonnie Johnson wore 1, and then he just sucked.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
You kind of have to earn the 1, I feel
like. I think you're right.
I feel like you kind of have to earn the 1. Like, it's kind of cocky for a rookie just to come in and be like, I'm wearing number 1, especially for a third rounder. Like, if you're C.J. Stroud, I think he could pull it off, but maybe not a third rounder. Maybe Tank Dell can do the Jabari Smith, change the number from rookie year to sophomore year. But this is great. C.J. Stroud's wearing number 7. That's awesome. Great. He's going to have a great career. Will Anderson's wearing number 51. I don't think he's going to be all that great because he's wearing number 51. Tank Dell's 13. All right. Back to some stuff that actually matters. Jersey numbers are silly.
Yeah, that was good job, Joe.
Yeah, thanks for breaking into the show with Texans jersey numbers.
That's what I'm here for.
If you had a meeting down the hall, that would have never happened.
What's up?
I'm here for the important things.
Mm. Okay.
I mean, we just lead topic for the wheelhouse. We just figured it out.
That is going to be the lead topic for the wheelhouse. But it was also the lead topic for the Killer Bees because you broke into our lead segment to tell us about stupid jersey numbers.
Nope. Trying to force feed us into becoming the wheelhouse, and it'll never happen.
Sorry, I thought Homer Jeremy was still here.
My Homer hat is not on. How many like shows in the city are going to use that as a segment? The jersey numbers for the Houston Texans.
Rookies. I know one station that is.
You think there'll be an entire segment over there?
Oh yeah.
You think so, Joe?
Yep.
A segment?
A full segment on rookie numbers.
Give me a break. You don't think we're getting like the history of number 7 at quarterback?
Right.
The best number 7s of all time.
So more than one segment?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Best number 51s of all time.
Am I selling it short?
Oh, yeah.
Very much
This
so.
Is going to be multiple segments?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
I think people are going to have in-depth conversation. What does it mean for the future of Kyahmie Fairbairn that he's given up number 7?
Is he ever going to be the same kicker? Is this going to motivate him into being an all-pro kicker? Like that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
That's bad. Okay, let's talk about the Astros. I'm over this jersey number thing. So the Astros have one of the best twos in all of baseball. You know what else I noticed in that game yesterday, Blinkers? Mm. I think we have a promotion in the bullpen. I think we have a new pecking order for the Houston Astros and Dusty Baker in the bullpen. Did you see who had the 7th inning?
Yeah, I did, but why am I not?
Because Rafael Montero has been jumped by Hector Neris.
Yeah, Neris.
Hector Neris is the third most important reliever to Dusty
Montero.
Baker now.
I saw Neris, and I saw my boy Abreu, and then I saw Ryan Pressly go...
Who did you not see?
Yeah.
Who normally has the 7th inning?
Yeah, the Mitsubishi Montero has been...
Montero has been jumped twice already this season. He started the year as the 8th inning guy. Yep. He was jumped by Brian Abreu. Yep. And then yesterday, because Montero was available yesterday, Montero hadn't pitched in a day, so he was rested. He was ready to go. And instead, Hector Neris had the 7th inning and not Rafael Montero. So the pecking order has been updated for Dusty Baker. Pressly at the top. Brian Abreu is the 2nd guy. Neris is now 3rd, jumping Montero, who's 4th. Stanek 5th, Maton 6th. Then you have your specialist.
Maybe
Matt Gage, the loogie, and Seth Martinez, the long guy.
Maybe Dusty comes out tomorrow and says, he's hurting. I don't know where.
Maybe
We decided to give him a little mental break.
It has been, there's been a promotion. in the Houston Astros bullpen. Hector Neris had the seventh inning. Ryan Stressly made an appearance yesterday for the Houston Astros. All's well that ends well is always what I say. But I wasn't feeling great. Runners at first and second, nobody out.
I was like, oh, my God.
Tying run at second, winning run at first base. And I wasn't feeling great that the Astros were going to leave Anaheim with that victory. But somehow he got it done.
Yeah, look, like you said, all's well that ends well. Because I was sitting here going, at least get out of this thing tied. Don't give up the lead. That would really suck. When you figured they were going to win the series and on a getaway day do all these great things. And then he found a way to kind of Houdini his way out of the disaster that was created. And you could take a deep breath and go, okay, that was better. But, you know, was it a day ago that everybody was going, oh, Presley at least looked great. He's been looking great. Well, he didn't look great yesterday.
I saw Astros Twitter ready to demote Ryan Presley. Like, there's people saying that he shouldn't be the closer. I saw some people saying that he doesn't like closing games. I saw some wild tweets about Ryan Presley in the ninth inning. Ryan Presley's your closer.
He's fine.
Like, Ryan Presley's going to be your guy. You go back to that inning, too. Like, Trout's ground ball hit the base. Shohei Ohtani.
Golf shot.
Wasn't a strike. It wasn't a strike, and he hit the two-run shot. So Stressly figured it out. All's well that ends well. Stop with the hyperbolic, demote Ryan Presley, and, you know, Abreu should be your closer. Both of them are very important to this Astros bullpen. All right, 713-780-ESPN. How big was this series win for the Astros? Was it the biggest series win they've had this year? How important are these rookie jersey numbers for the Houston Texans as well? 713-780-3776. HRMP listener line. We're on Twitch. Twitch.tv/ESPN975, and we thank you again for the work that you did with Christian Javier. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Also, we just talked about Brian Abreu a little bit. Jose Abreu didn't play yesterday. I need Jose Abreu to be a good teammate and demand something from Dusty Baker. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
The Twitchers are all over it today, man. The Twitchers had a great night last night, pitching, basically recreating the dominance of Christian Javier. They're defending Ryan Presley right now, king of Twitch. Presley's an elite closer. Do bad things to the haters. Todd, Presley got out of it. We won. Job complete. Now, A might have landed up on Bad Take Boulevard. He said DFA Stressly. But he does say just kidding. Twitchers are having a great day. Let's see if the Twitchers can continue this and have a perfect day. They've never had a perfect day before. They're off to a pretty good start so far. Let's see if it can continue. Think the Twitchers? What's your confidence level in them?
I mean, what are the odds here that they get a perfect day?
The odds are not great.
I mean, it's got to be like minus 5,000.
There's never been a perfect day in Twitch history.
No chance.
But today, they're on their way.
I believe in these guys. I believe that they will absolutely knock it out of the park.
Can you define perfect day?
We'll know it when we see it. We'll know it when we see it.
I can tell you that we'll know when it isn't perfect.
Yeah. We'll know when
the no-no is broken up without talking about it. We can tell you exactly when it's going to happen.
Keith from L.A. says, y'all beat the Angels, have a party. Is Keith from L.A. one of those dudes that lives in a city and pulls for both teams like Joe? Joe's a Chicago guy. Loves the Cubs, loves the White Sox. Keith from L.A., that type of guy.
Slander. Well,
Keith from L.A. is just a front runner. Like, he's a regular season type dude because regular season's the only time he can really celebrate his L.A. teams. And then all of a sudden the playoffs come, and then Key wants to talk about the next sport on the calendar because his team is done and they folded up their tents and they went home. So let him have some fun now because he's going camping and fishing real soon.
Yeah, Jed says I'm baiting the Twitchers. No, I'm not. Y'all are off to a great start. Y'all have never hit the first segment break with a perfect game intact. Y'all have done that today. So let's see if you can continue it. 8240, Brandon T says, Stroud is 7, Tank Dell's 13, 713 connection.
I like that.
I like it.
That's very, very well played.
That's good.
That's my favorite thing about jersey unveilings is that text from Brandon T.
That was extremely well played.
You think it was thought out? You think it was like by design? I think it was.
For sure.
I don't think the Texans thought it out.
No, I think Tank and Stroud did, though.
I could see Tank leading that.
Because Tank like was in communication with Stroud.
They built a relationship during the combine or whatever.
The 713 connection.
Yeah. I think it's real. I think it's legit.
That's really good.
I think it's legit. I think Tank Dell and C.J. Stroud thought of this.
If it goes the way Texans fans hope, the Texans hope, that's an insane marketing campaign.
It's maybe one of the best they've ever had. If C.J. Stroud's a top 10 quarterback in the NFL and Tank Dell is his best receiver,
perfect.
Huge, huge win.
And they will cash in on it.
Did the Texans make a mistake by letting Tank Dell have the number 13? Should they have saved it for T. Higgins next year?
Coming up on the highway to hell. Next. All right, 713-780.
I can't be more excited, you guys. It's going to be a great day. You play Pee-wee football. You know what it feels like when you get that helmet and pads on for the first time.
Prodigal Vaught saying Mike Evans is 13. Things are looking good for him career-wise. We might have Evans on the show coming up, huh?
Yeah, Mike Evans might be making an appearance soon. We're working on it.
Might be making an appearance on the Killer Bees.
Galveston Ball, high school alum. Played hoops there, too.
Toros?
It's a weird name.
I think it's the Toros.
No, it's like that, but it's different because they just did a feature. There's brothers that are, one's a senior, one's a sophomore, that play baseball and football. And it's not Toros, but because
Tornadoes?
It might be the... No, but I mean...
I'm pretty sure it's Toros.
Okay. It's just... They definitely shortened it, and they put it on the field, and it says home of the... And I'm like, what is that? Because it caught my eye like that.
What school is this?
Galveston Ball. What's his... oh, man. I'm blanking on the dude's name that was a football coach there for a couple of years. Played in the NFL for the Chiefs. Was a former Houston Cougar.
Oh, the running back.
Yeah.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
I've talked to him all the time. I can't remember his name. All right, 713-780-ES. It's the Tours. It's not the Toros. It's the Tours.
Yeah, I was like, what's a tour?
Yeah, so short for Tornadoes, I think. So Tours. I've never heard Tornadoes shortened to Tours, though.
It's on the field as home of the Tours.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So we're both in the wheelhouse, but just off. All right, Jose Abreu. Here's where Jose Abreu needs to be a good teammate, Blankers. Dusty Baker refuses to drop Jose Abreu in the lineup. We've seen this. He talked about it yesterday that they've tried it, that it didn't work out that well. He hates doing the lefty-lefty thing. He thinks it's bad feng shui, even though Yordan is brilliant against lefties and hits lefties better than righties, even though Kyle Tucker hits lefties way better than Jose Abreu hits lefties and is very formidable against left-handed pitching. We would like to see Kyle Tucker protect Yordan Alvarez in the lineup, but Dusty Baker refuses to do it. He doesn't want to mess with Abreu. He wants the righty to separate the lefties, great feng shui and a batting order, blah, 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 blah. It is time for Jose Abreu to earn a little bit of money. And I don't mean through his production offensively. Mm-hmm. It's time for Jose Abreu to be a good teammate. He needs to knock on the skipper's office or knock that thing down, go to Dusty Baker and demand to be moved down in the lineup. Tell Dusty, look, Dusty, I'm not swinging a good bat right now. I know I'm not, but I'm going to get through this. I'm going to start turning it around. I'm going to have success.
Draymond Green.
Coming right now. How about Jose Altuve doing it during the COVID year?
Yeah, Draymond Green.
Knock on that door.
Draymond Green got suspended. Yeah. The team jumped out and played well, and he said, you know what? By the way, Kimball Anders. Good call.
Yeah.
Draymond Green came out and said, you know what? I like the way the team started with their energy when I didn't start that game because I was suspended. I want to come off the bench. This is Abreu's moment to be a good team player. You're right. Own it for a second. You know you got the cash in your pocket no matter what. But show right away that you can be a good team player and say, I need to hit in the 6-7 spot for a while. Move me down. Let the lineup cook. And then, you know, if I get it going, then we'll talk.
He needs to be a good teammate. Degenerate Gambler saying Ryan Gosling did it on Remember the Titans, told the coach he was a liability. That's a good recall. Mm-hmm. Remember? Whenever he, hey, put me on the bench. I'm not getting the job done. Put in the other guy. And then they, you know, won a lot of football games. That's what Abreu should be doing. Jose Altuve did this during the COVID year. And see, I think that's the difference between, like, Dusty Baker and old school manager. Because if you had, like, a, you know, analytical guy, Jose Abreu would have been moved down in the lineup a long time ago. And it's not a negative for Dusty. I think that a lot of times over the course of 162 games that the old school manager's ways kind of went out in the long run. I don't think they went out in the short term. But I think they went out in the long term. But this is why you need a professional, a veteran, someone who's disappointed that they're letting the team down. Because Jose Abreu has more RBI situations than anybody else on this team, and he's been your biggest liability offensively. It's time for Jose Abreu to be the pro that everybody told us that he was. Knock on Dusty's door and be like, hey, Skip. Just move me down the lineup until I figure this out. I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to continue working hard on this. I will make this right. But just move me down right now. I'm not swinging a good bat. I know you don't want to move me down. I appreciate that. But for the better of the betterment of the team, let's move me down the lineup for a month.
Well, the same way you're taking the money, and you know the money's going to be there, take it on your shoulders. Take it off of Dusty. Take it off of Dana Brown. Take it off the organization that is all trying to cover for you and try to be hopeful for you. And we saw it yesterday with Dusty basically insinuating he's hurt. I just don't know what it is. I mean, instead of having to have Dusty go out and say those kind of things, just say, you know what? I haven't got off to a hot start. I know this team is going to need me at some point, and I'm going to be there. But for the time being, the right thing for me to do is to do what Dusty doesn't want to do. I'll do it for you. Move me down and let these guys do what they're doing right now. There's a lot of guys that are hot, or you know, however you want to phrase it. But I think it would be the right move for him. It'd be the right move for the team. I think it would endear a lot of fans that have already kind of turned sour on him. Mm-hmm. To come back and say, you know what? I like this.
I think he would win some people over.
Oh, no question.
I think he'd win some people over because now, like, this is what everybody wants, except for, like, Dusty. But I think Dusty's doing it more out of protection for, like, messing with Jose Abreu. But if Dusty tells you after the game that, you know, Jose Abreu tomorrow is going to be in Chicago for the first time since he left Chicago. And if Dusty turns in the lineup tomorrow and Abreu's hitting seventh, and then Dusty either mentions it pregame or postgame, Abreu knocked on my door, said that, you know, he wanted to move down in this lineup because he's not at producing. I think a lot of people would feel, you know, warm about what Jose Abreu did. I think it's a great idea, and, you know, especially because I thought about it. But this is what needs to happen. Yiner Diaz played first base yesterday, Blankers. First time we've seen him at first base all season, even though people thought he might be more of a first baseman than a catcher. I was thinking about this yesterday, and Diaz 1-for-3, had an RBI, drove in a run. If you gave Yiner Diaz, because we always have this conversation with Yiner Diaz and Martin Maldonado, because people want more Yiner Diaz. I'm certainly one of them. And we talk about if Yiner Diaz got every single at-bat from the catcher position the rest of the year, would he have better numbers than Martin Maldonado getting every at-bat the rest of the way? Which is pretty unanimous that yes, he would. I thought about it the other way for the first time yesterday. What if we talked about this at first base? What if Jose Abreu, from here on out, let's call it 400 plate appearances, he had every at-bat at first base, and Yiner Diaz had every at-bat at first base. Which of those two would produce better numbers?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm inclined to believe that it's going to be Yiner Diaz. I just am, because I know that he's going to occasionally he's going to square one up, and he's got power enough that he's going to – look, the ball that he hit the other day for a sack fly, it was just the launch angle. I mean, he hit it so high in the air, when they looked at the exit velocity after it traveled, the announcers were almost like, did he get enough of that? And then it traveled to like the edge of the warning track, and when they looked at the exit velo, they were like, he hit that over 100 miles an hour. I believe that from a power perspective alone, that it would turn into the numbers. But I believe at the end of the year that Yiner Diaz would have better numbers than Jose Abreu.
I think so, too. And maybe it's more – and Yiner Diaz hasn't been, like, great so far this year. Now he's doing this in part-time work. Like,
and he's just getting comfortable.
220 average, 548 OPS. Like, that's very Jose Abreu-like, quite honestly. But Abreu's playing every single day, and he's hitting fourth. Yiner Diaz is playing most of the time one every fifth day. Now he's starting to get a little bit more at-bats, catching J.P. France. I think he's got a liver bat. I think if you gave Yiner Diaz those ABs versus Jose Abreu those ABs, honestly, I think it'd be Yiner Diaz. I think Diaz would produce better numbers this year.
Well, but remember now, Dana Brown had already set these kind of expectations and a bar for how many at-bats he was supposed to get, and he's way behind. When I say he's just getting his feet wet, he literally has just tapped his big toe in the water. When you start getting him consistent at-bats and he starts feeling comfortable and he starts seeing more pitchers and major league pitchers and understands a little bit more about the day-to-day regimen in the big leagues, I believe those numbers are only going to go up. You can't say the same thing about Abreu because he's been there and done it so long that most people think that he's done doing it. And that's a scary proposition.
You unanimous on this, Joe George? Both of those guys get 400 plate appearances the rest of this season. Who would have the better numbers?
Yeah, I think it's Yiner Diaz at this point. There's something off about Jose Abreu. Maybe Dusty's right. Maybe he's hurt. Like maybe he's not. He's just not comfortable. You know, I thought what Michael Bourne said last week when he was on with you guys. Yeah. Was really interesting. Like maybe it's just he's not comfortable like how Brantley was when he first got to Houston, but maybe he's just bad.
I just look at video and I started looking at video like a week or two ago when it was really starting to become noticeable. And I just don't see a guy that one thing to say he doesn't have any pop, but it's all arms. There's no hip turn. There's no lower legs. There's no drive. And kind
there's
of
no heart.
Well, I'm not going to say that, but I'm looking at a guy for his size and what he's done throughout his career. There's enough to say there should be a lot of high velo, hard hit baseballs and there should be a lot of balls driven to the gaps, or at least even if you hit them at somebody, screaming liners. I don't see that.
That was the biggest difference between this year and last year. Is like, I know he didn't hit many home runs last year, but he was hitting the ball hard. Like, go look at the Baseball Savant numbers. Won't bore you with the details, but he was hitting the ball hard. Like, his Baseball Savant numbers this year,
like we talked about, he hit a pickleball down the first baseline that happened, actually bounced the right way to get him a double and an air to third base.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't like a laser shot that ricocheted off the bottom of the wall.
6-0-3-0 Maldi dropping BZs on the Ohtanis of baseball. He did it once.
But
he did it once.
He had the great count for it, too.
He said, I don't see Diaz doing that. Oh, and Abreu isn't hurt. He's just old. You're probably right, 60-30. I'm not going to lie.
I think he's hurt. He's hurt mentally. I think it's a mental situation to where he needs a little time off.
IL psychologist. We're going to get into some Abreu theories of what could be going on a little bit later in the show. 713-780-ESPN if you have Abreu theories. 713-780-3776. The Houston Texans, look, we're kidding about the jersey numbers. CJ Stroud 7, Tank Dell's 13, 51 for Will Anderson. The Texans did do something significant yesterday, though. Shaq Mason, long-term-ish deal, is going to be here for the foreseeable future. Is this a good deal for the Houston Texans? How good can this offensive line be relative to the rest of the league? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN
97.5. Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On the air, you want us to give a score of this bad rejoin music?
Are we doing it for the overall open to the show or just bump music?
I think it wants overall open. I think you might have given up too much information.
We're going all in now. We are changing the show intro song. But we don't know what to what.
Yeah, we're kind of auditioning. Hey, the Twitchers have been good at this.
So, Twitchers
have been good at
kind of where I was going with it. Like,
yeah, we're
going
to have a new sound after Memorial Day, including us. I think we're going to ditch our intro because we don't like it. Brendan is one. You know what Brendan did to us? He did to us with his intro, like the new intro to the show.
Yeah.
A week before we fired him, he did to us what Lovie Smith did to the Houston Texans.
It's a good call.
He did to us with our show open with what Lovie Smith did in Week 18, winning the game against the Indianapolis.
He knew that we didn't like him, and he knew that his days were numbered.
He knew he was about to be sacked.
Yep. So he was like, "Hey guys, the music you're using, it's kind of controversial. We're not after going to kill that. I've got an idea for a new open. Just roll with me on this. I'm going to create some new music,
and then we don't like it.
Nope.
So we're going to do something new coming up soon." And Joe's, trying to,
so the real question
sample
is,
some things. What's the real question?
He's Lovey. Who am I?
You're D'Amico.
Look a lot like Brent.
You're D'Amico. No, everything's
he looks
trending
like
up.
Me.
No, you look a lot like
no,
Brent.
No, I worked.
I think
first.
Junior Bronco. That's like a push.
Wouldn't that be the same thing?
I
look like him. He looks like me.
I worked at Gal Media first. So
you want to own that?
He's Joe too. That's what Jose and Bobby Beats and all those guys used to call him was Joe, too.
I don't know about that.
Kugblay says, I'll buy Joe some tuna if we go perfect. The perfect game's still on in Twitch. They're doing pretty good so far.
Richie's
seen
in there,
anything.
Too, right?
I have no idea.
I think Richie's,
I wouldn't know.
Oh, I think
I don't see anything he says.
I'll check. I think Richie's in there.
Well, if he's in there and they go perfect, that would be
That's
incredible.
What I'm saying. That would be extremely impressive.
That'd be really good. The Houston Texans. Oh, Big C's there. He might ruin it. I'm just kidding. The Texans locked down Shaq Mason to a 3-year, $36 million deal. Aaron Wilson broke this news, and when Aaron Wilson typed up this tweet, he said, Texans are finalizing 3-year, $36 million contract extension with offensive guard Shaq Mason, $22 million guaranteed, including a $10 million signing bonus, making him one of the highest paid guards in NFL. Whenever I saw highest paid guards, I was thinking like top three money. And I'm like, Shaq Mason's good, but should Shaq Mason be one of the top three guards in all of football when he's never made an all pro? I know we poo-poo on Pro Bowls, but rather have a Pro Bowler than not have a Pro Bowler. He had zero Pro Bowls, zero all pros. Should they be paying him top three guard money? But then when you dive into it a little bit more, it's actually outside of the top 10. Like, I think it ranks 11th in the NFL amongst guards. I'm a fan of it. Like, you have a rookie quarterback who's going to be on a rookie deal, lock up the offensive line, make that a strength, protect your rookie quarterback, protect your huge investment.
Yeah, no, look, I like it too. And I think there's so much that goes with this, but the last time when we looked at the Texans getting a potential franchise quarterback, He got his head ripped off. He got PTSD. We had all kinds of issues. He was never the same. And in a lot of ways, the Texans took a long time to not be the same, which was just getting crushed. And so the fact that this time around, we talked about doing what was necessary to see what Davis Mills could be a year ago by putting weapons around him. The biggest thing that you could possibly do for C.J. Stroud and for a new head coach and a first-time offensive coordinator calling plays is to give him whatever you can do offensive line-wise and weaponry-wise so that they can have success. I think the fact that when I looked at the numbers, the first thing I said was, well, thank God it's not Laramie Tunsil money.
Because, well, yeah, I can make that as a guard.
But I know, as a guard versus a tackle, it's different. But I'm thinking, you know what? I'm okay with that because of the fact that it's so important to keep this kid upright and see what he can do. And he's going to take some lumps just by learning the position as it relates to the NFL. But the fact that he's not going to be completely gun-shy looking over his shoulder every time he gets the ball from center and the clock hits two in his head,
yeah,
it's a good thing.
And Shaq Mason's a good player. Like, again, I don't want to dive into the advanced numbers, but, like, didn't allow a sack last year. He's not penalized ever. Right guard was a huge hole last year with A.J. Can. And your left guard position, too, is, like, a bit of an unknown. So why not lock up the opposite side of the center with a solid right guard? Hopefully that the rest of the offensive line can bring up Kenyon Green and make him a good football player. So I like the signing. It's only 3 years, so it's not like this huge long-term investment. You make sure that you have a pretty stable offensive line in front of a rookie quarterback. You don't have to worry about, Deshaun Watson. Now, Deshaun Watson was a little bit self-induced with all the sacks that he took, but it was behind a bad offensive line and they overpaid for Laramie Tunsil. You don't have to worry about a David Carr situation where they had an expansion offensive line and their first expansion pick, Tony Boselli, never played a snap in the Battle Red and the Liberty White and the Deep Steel Blue. So, like, you don't want to recreate those situations for a rookie quarterback. So I like this deal, even if it could potentially be a slight overpay. I think it's a good thing to lock up an offensive line in front of C.J. Stroud. There are a couple of questions that come out of this. Now that you have an offensive line that I think is pretty set in stone, like I don't think that, the center position maybe is up for grabs, but everybody kind of assumes that Juice Scruggs is going to win that spot. Right. I don't think anybody really thinks that a veteran's going to unseat Kenyon Green as the starting left guard. So if we assume those two things, you're looking at Tunsil, you're looking at Kenyon Green, you're looking at Juice Scruggs potentially, you're looking at Shaq Mason you just re-signed, and you're looking at Titus Howard. Where do you think that offensive line can rank amongst the NFL?
I think it's top half.
Okay.
I think it's definitely top half. I think it's a potential to get higher than that because I think you got some quality, talented players on that line. Take the salaries out of it and just talk about somewhat from an experience standpoint, a been there, done that standpoint, and then coming together as long as they get continuity standpoint. You look at what, you can talk about the money with Mason, but if you talk about what he can possibly do to a Kenyon Green and now come in and work with this kid and teach him some of the idiosyncrasies of his experiences in the league and the teams that he's played for and the quarterbacks that he's worked with and the most important aspects of it. And you start thinking about guys that are in the same room and working together on a continual, even Juice, to get with these veteran players that still have plenty left in the tank and say, hey, look, you know what? We're here to guide you too because your success is our success. I think it can only help, and I think that top 15 is kind of on the loose end, where I think the ceiling gets more, this could be a top 10 offensive line in the league when you look at all the different guys, their resumes, and what they bring to the table.
I don't think you can take the salaries out of it. And that's why I think that it needs to be a top 10 offensive line. And the reason
it needs to be?
Yeah. I think it needs to be with the investment that you have in it. The reason that you can't take the salaries out of it is because it's a salary cap league. And, like, I think that the best teams that win consistently in the NFL are the ones that are maximizing production for the dollar. And in a salary cap league, when everybody spends roughly the same, you have to be the best of maximizing value for the dollar. That's how you get your competitive edge in a sport where it's so razor thin of who wins and who loses. So because of the investments that they've committed to the offensive line, Laramie Tunsil paying him top left tackle money, Kenyon Green using a pick in the teens to select him a couple of years ago, Drew Scruggs, many people think that they drafted him way too early as a second rounder. So he needs to succeed.
Well, but there was also a lot of people that were wondering, like he was climbing and they were wondering how quickly he could go. They think he's got a lot of talent.
I don't mind that he went in the second round. but it's why the offensive line needs to be a top 10 offensive line, because Laremy Tunsil's making high-end money. Kenyon Green was a first-rounder as a guard, first guard taken in the middle of the first round. Juice Scruggs was a second-round draft pick when, you know, many people didn't have him going in the second round. You traded for Shaq Mason and pay him top 15 money at the right guard position, and Tytus Howard is also a first-round draft pick. So you've invested a lot of money and draft capital in your offensive line, and in the NFL in a salary cap league, if you've invested all of that, I think it has to be a top 10 offensive line to get full return.
I understand where you're coming from.
And I think it can be, honestly.
I think maybe, but I was going to say, maybe towards the end of the year, if everything goes well, no injuries, continuity keeps coming week by week and building and working together, because you're going to take some lumps, just like we talk about from a quarterback, but maybe not as significant and noticeable. But we saw what Kenyon Green went through a year ago, and we know that he took more lumps and bumps and bruises than is seen, you know, in a 24-hour clinic, you know, in a week. Like, he was getting crushed on any kind of pass blocking. So we know he's going to the same thing can be happen if Juice gets the starting job. But you also realize that the biggest thing that we always talked about when this team over the years has played musical chairs with other offensive linemen and put like band-aids on things instead of and moved guys around instead of letting guys get comfortable in one position and sticking there all year. If they can stay relatively injury free and everybody sticks to the position that they're supposed to play, I think by the end of the year we may be talking about an offensive line that could get to top 10.
With all the investment in this offensive line, top left tackle financially, a first rounder, top guard selected 2 years ago, Juice Scruggs, a center taken in the second round, Shaq Mason, you're paying him top 15 guard money after trading for him, and Tytus Howard, a first rounder. Where does this offensive line need to rank for the Houston Texans relative to the rest of the NFL? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Speaking of Tytus Howard, does the signing of Shaq Mason impact Tytus at all? Because he's going into the final year of his deal. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Brandon.
Welcome back for more Uniform Talk. What do you like best in the 713? About 7-1-3 and 51 for the Sackmaster. And everything else that we got to talk about, I've got cookies and milk. You've got commentary. Let's go.
Maybe a hair too long. I'm gonna give this one a 1.
Don't care.
No, not you.
Oh, song. This is a King of Twitch suggestion.
King of Twitch suggested this? It's troll? King of Troll, yeah, more like it. Perfect game is ruined.
We can't do it because this is the whole song for what we call one of the two.
Perfect game is ruined.
The two enemies of the station. The two enemies. This is one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's King, out. King of Twitch ruined the perfect game. Dr. Dre says Baytown baddie. That's funny. Maybe the perfect game's back on.
Shut your mouth, Dre. You call someone else that, brother. I'll take your ass down.
What did Paulie want with his Larry Bird jersey?
He loved it.
He was just saying he loved that. He thought it was great.
That dude he works with, the
McClane?
The play?
The show.
Oh, my bad.
The show. The big show.
My bad. The Playbill or the...
The big show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really?
Isn't that his name?
I don't know. You worked with him, didn't you?
No, I never worked with him.
Oh, okay.
No. I worked with the Baytown baddie.
How'd that go?
Not great.
Oh.
Not great. People think we don't get along.
Yeah, really.
713-780-ESPN. Shaq Mason, Houston Texan, 3 years, $36 million. Outside of the top 10 guard money, yes, you're building stability with the offensive line in front of a rookie quarterback. I don't think there's anything negative to say about this contract extension. I think it's a good deal for Caserio. They can figure out the money, how to, you know, manipulate the cap. Nothing negative to say about this this extension. The question that I do wonder, though, they're already paying Laremy Tunsil top dollar at the left tackle position. Kenyon Green, look, rookie contract, no big deal. Center position, probably going to be a rookie with Juice Scruggs. Rookie contract, no big deal. Paying Shaq Mason top 15 guard money. Does this mean Tytus Howard's tenure as a Houston Texan is soon to be over? Paying Tytus or paying Laremy what they're paying. Shaq Mason here. You got two rookies that you're probably hoping develop into a player that you're paying down the road. Is Tytus Howard's future as a Houston Texan, is this it? Is this the final year?
I honestly think it's going to come down. This one will come down to money, and it's not going to be that they're willing to overpay.
It's almost like you have to get a hometown discount.
Yeah, this is the Clint Capela deal, kind of, but in a different way. Where they're, if you think you're worth all that, then go out and see if you can get it. But, you know, we've already extended ourselves with a lot of the money that we've put on the line. And we've got a certain, we've got a number in mind for you. If that works for you, we'll talk and consider, you know, see if we can work something out. But if you think you're getting top whatever money, or you think you're worth this and we think you're worth that, then I could see them moving on.
I'm torn on this. Like, I'm on the fence because it's a weird situation, because if he plays really well, now maybe he prices himself out of what you would bring him back at. If he plays kind of at a subpar level, and again, we're talking about this offensive line that, you know, you think is going to be in the top half of the league, which I think is very fair. I think they will be too. I'm saying that they need to play as a top 10 offensive line with all the investment, either finances or draft capital, that they've invested in this offensive line. They have to be top 10. So if he plays to a really high level, he might price himself out of the range you're willing to spend. But if he plays poorly, you're not going to want to spend it on him.
Yeah, see, you're right.
I think it's the final
catch
year.
It's a catch-22, and it's not in his favor. It's not like Correa betting on himself and then having a year where he earned the big contract. It's not like guys that say, you know, this is a prove-it year, and I'm out to prove it to, you know, whether it be you or the rest of the league, that I'm worth this. I think you're right. And I think a lot of it, too, is the fact that Caserio now is going to have to be a little bit more budget conscious. And he's going to have to start watching some of the dollars that make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure it makes sense that he's going to, you know, want the kind of money that he thinks he's, and maybe he thinks he's worth it, and maybe teams around the league do.
But even this year is going to be like a big swinger in that.
Yeah, and I don't know that the Texans are going to be willing to pay what he thinks he's worth.
And honestly, like, we've spent so much time, you know, post-draft talking about, like, the name Marvin Harrison Jr. keeps coming up, right?
Yeah, I'd rather not hear that name for a foreseeable future.
I don't think that, like, I think that since I have the Texans winning, like, 6 or 7 games this year, I'm not even going to try. There's the tackle from Penn State who, like, people said he would have been the top tackle in this draft.
He came back for NIL money.
For NIL money, and then there's Joe Alt from Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. Two probably franchise tackles in the top 10 next year.
Yeah.
I think that's what we're talking about, is the Texans have a top 10-ish pick.
Well, how are they getting that?
No, like that they've given up to the Cardinals.
Oh.
And this is where it's like, Tytus Howard didn't perform. You're not going to pay Tytus Howard. And there's two franchise tackles in the draft.
Yeah.
And you've missed the opportunity to fill that hole. And you have your guy post Laramie. You have your right tackle for
the
now.
So you use the Browns pick and something else and try and move up?
Maybe.
Yeah, or
I just
or
think
you,
it's like that's what you miss out on. Or you take someone later. But like I think.
Or it's Tytus. Or you either overpay him or you bring back a player who didn't have a great year. Because,
yeah.
Because you've cost yourself the opportunity cost of drafting another franchise tackle.
That's why I feel like they got to. If they believe in Tytus, you got to pay him right now. Like, I think you got to sign him before the season starts.
Oh, no way.
Because I would rather, it's the risk assessment. Is it better to pay him now and you know what he is, but you can get him cheaper?
If you feel like you have to sign Tytus Howard, either, you know, at some period between now and the, you know, when he's up, what you just said is a great point, because you're probably not going to find his replacement in the draft, at least a really good one that you can count on immediately. You're probably not going to find a great tackle in free agency. Like, it's more of a bridge guy, because that's just the way free agency works. If they're really good football players, they seldom hit free agency. So I think now is the answer. I think now is the answer before he could potentially take off. Like, I think you should lock him up early, take care of him, and hope that you can develop him into a better player than his salary. He was solid last year. He wasn't bad.
Don't you feel like, in terms of the risk-reward, that you're risking a lot by committing all that money up
it
before
depends
he
on
even
the price.
Plays another year?
But, I mean, he played well this past year. Yeah. Like, he wasn't bad. But I guess the fear I have is, how do you replace that position? Like, you're looking at, you know, who knows where the draft pick's going to land of Cleveland, but that could potentially be 20th. You're looking at a second rounder that, you know, you have, that you're drafting a tackle to play immediately, again, behind C.J. or in front of C.J. Stroud.
We don't know.
I don't think free agency is great for any players. Like, Shaq Mason was traded for.
Well, but also, free agency is where you get overpaid.
Right.
And you get paid on previous accomplishments.
You very rarely find great value in free agency.
Yeah.
Like, it almost never happens.
Now, thankfully, it's not the left tackle, because then you're grossly overpaying. But if it's even if it's the right tackle, it's an important enough position that you're going to overpay. So are you going to overpay more in the open market for a guy based on what he's previously done?
Right.
Or are you going to overpay more for a guy that you drafted in the first round, that you've developed, that's developed fairly nicely? been a a very versatile pick for you.
That's I think it's an easy places. Answer. Yeah. I think it's cheaper to sign Titus Howard than try to play the free agency game. So maybe it is something you try to do before the season kicks off this year. Go ahead and lock that in and lock in an offensive line in front of C.J. Stroud. Degenerate Gambler brings up a really good point. Titus is a Bill O'Brien guy. He is. Like, this isn't a Nick Caserio draft pick. Like, should that matter? I think it does matter because you're trying to find the right scheme. You're also talking about a new-look offense that, you know, if you have very specific offensive linemen that you like in your scheme, does Titus Howard fit that scheme? So these are decisions that you kind of have to be forecasting in terms of should we be locking up Titus Howard now. But now you're spending pretty big money on left tackle, right guard. You have two rookies that you're hoping are your future at left guard and center. I think the future of Titus Howard as the right tackle of this organization is very much in question.
It is in question, but it could be in play for another guy you lock up. You're right. I wouldn't do that. I'd like to see more of what he could play. But I don't do this very often, if ever. But as a Bill O'Brien guy, that was one that Bill O'Brien, now in retrospect, he got right. Because if you remember, Andre Dillard was the hot name. Dillard was the guy that everybody was like, you could have had him. And then you traded, but you, instead of taking Andre Dillard, you took Titus Howard. And Dillard is not even a starter in the league.
Yeah.
He's a second stringer with the Eagles.
I don't think it's fair to compare Titus Howard to Dillard, because you're right. Titus Howard's
coming
a better player than
being
Dillard.
Compared.
No, you're right. Titus Howard's a better player than Dillard. But whenever I'm looking at Titus Howard, I'm asking myself the question, has he played himself to what you would expect out of a late first-round pick?
I was just giving Bill O'Brien at least credit.
Sure.
He got one right.
But there. I don't think that when we're looking at Titus Howard and his rookie deal and he's going into this fifth-year option and we're talking about potentially locking up Titus Howard for the foreseeable future, like, who cares what Andre Dillard has done? Who cares he's been a bust?
I brought that up for saying that I will give Bill O'Brien credit for getting there, right. But
he also didn't have the decision. Like, Dillard was off the board.
Right. Right. Well, no, at the time, people thought you could have traded up to get him, or there were options that were on the table for them to be in position to take him, and then they passed on all of that, and they ended up taking a guy that everybody's like, who, from where?
I don't know if I can get O'Brien credit for staying put and then drafting the guy that was only on the board.
I mean, I remember the general crushing Bill O'Brien pretty aggressively for not trading up for Dillard and taking Titus.
And then also Philly traded up for that pick, knowing that the Texans were going to take a tackle.
Yeah.
And Titus Howard did not have a first-round grade then.
Yeah, I think it was that the Texans weren't aggressive, but the Eagles were. Mm-hmm. Honestly, the more I think about it, I think it's over. Are you going to invest in another tackle? Or is it more, fiscally responsible as a franchise to just take one in the draft? You know, you have, two second-rounders next year? Again,
It's 2 seconds.
When I get into the
I thought you had a Cleveland second.
I think it was a third.
Okay, maybe
it was a third. It wasn't a second.
But so you have you have a first rounder from Cleveland. You have your second rounder. I think it probably makes more sense to tackle the tackle position.
What you did there
in the draft.
Yeah, they have their own second, their own third. Cleveland's pick next year is actually the fourth.
Gotcha.
You don't even have their third. You have an extra fourth.
You're going to get into a back and forth between the agent and the your negotiating staff and no matter what, because from Howard's representation, they're going to come at you and say, you never really gave him an opportunity to really show what he can do over the body of work. Last year, when you finally quit moving him around and put him at one position, he had a pretty good year. But we feel like if you'd have played him at that same position the entire time he's been here, he'd be a more productive player, and we'd be looking for even more money.
It's Jermaine, who writes for SportsMap, does a great job. You should be reading all of his work. He says, wholeheartedly agree it'll come down to money with Titus Howard, and that might be the question. If Titus is looking for top 10 tackle money, don't let the door hit you on your way out. If it's top 25 money, we can do some business
right,
here.
Right.
So it does. I think it comes down strictly to the price tag for Titus Howard. But it's interesting now. Left tackle secured, right guard secured, draft picks at left guard and center. Is Titus Howard going to fall out of favor? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Astros won a big series in Anaheim yesterday. If the Astros are going to make a big splash at the trade deadline because of these injuries, who are the players that you are not willing to trade for? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Enrolls you in recurring automated marketing text messages. Consent not required to purchase. Message and data rates.